You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more.
This is your host, Simon Scriver.
But I'm on holiday at the moment, so here is guest host, Clay Buck.
Hi, this is Clay Buck, hosting for Simon Scriver, who is on a much-needed and well-deserved vacation. And when Simon kicked out and said, hey, I'm going to be away for a while, anybody want to cover the podcast? A couple of us jumped in and went, yeah, we're happy to. So thanks, Simon. We promise not to mess things up while you're away.
Too much.
Too much, exactly. Although no complete commitments made. I'm happy to be here today. I'm joined by Barbara O'Reilly and Sharian Koshy. And we got to talking about this idea and like what would be meaningful and what would be interesting to talk about. And I think there's so much discussion right now going on in the sector and in the profession about self-care and how do we respond to high stress environments and how do we take care of ourselves as fundraisers. And what resonated for me was thinking about tribe. How do you find your fundraising tribe? So I reached out to Barbara and Sharian and went, hey, you guys want to come together and have this discussion? And because they're wonderful, they said, yes. And here we are. So Barbara O'Reilly, let me start with you. Give us a little bit of intro and background, who you are.
Thank you, Clay. So I have been fundraising for what I feel like has been since the dawn of time. Well, and Clay, I know, you can appreciate like when, before PCs, when we still had like the little paper. Mac cubes, yep. We had paper yep. files, right? We had to manually do mail merges and I think we had a typewriter. So
carbon paper. Remember carbon paper?
Oh yeah. Carbon paper. You're right.
Great.
Oh my gosh. Right. So I have been I've been fundraising for more than 25 years and have been consulting for the last 10. I spent my in-house life in big shops at universities, national membership organizations. I spent a year and a half working overseas in England at a university there. And for the last 10 years, I've been really drawing on the best practices and the experiences I gained in established fundraising shops to create coaching and skills building and guidance for nonprofits of all sizes. So ironically, while I spent sort of more than half of my career so to date in big shops, the clients I've worked with now for the last 10 years or so have been really smaller to mid-size, with a couple of exceptions of big shops. But I really, in addition to the hands-on, the practical work that I do, I really believe so strongly in giving back to the profession. So I'm president-elect of the AFPDC chapter. I got to know you two fine friends through our work on the Regari Advisory Panel. I'm involved as a volunteer with AFP International on the Government Relations Committee, on the Conference Committee, and I feel like there's probably one more I'm drawing. Professional development.
Well, I think you should. I think you should sleep at some point.
I sleep, yeah, once in a while.
That's part of the self-care strategy, right?
Wait, here we go, right? Exactly. Right. And yet I've made time to do this podcast. So.
Yes, of course. Well, because you asked. It's because I wanted to spend time talking to the two of you.
See? Sharian, how about you?
So I don't know about the dawn of time, but this is my 21st year in fundraising. And I don't know if you two actually know this, but it was a surprise to our friend Ian when I told him that I started out fundraising as a chugger, what they call...
did you really?
I did. So in England, they call face-to-face fundraisers chuggers. And my first job out of high school was to be a face-to-face fundraiser for the Fund for Public Interest Research. And I went door-to-door raising money for organizations like the Sierra Club and the Human Rights Campaign and for other PIRG causes. And I didn't really know at that point that it would become a career, that I would end up asking people for money for the rest of my life. But here we are 21 years later, and I worked for Des Moines Performing Arts, and like Barbara said, you know, we met through Rugari, the three of us met through Rugari, but I also feel strongly about giving back to the profession, because I think when I started, it was just, you know, figure it out as you go and read some books. And it, there wasn't even a, you can go Google that at that point. It was, you know, you're on your own.
There wasn't even a Google, let alone right? can go do it.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I am the co-founder of the Des Moines Fundraising Institute, where we teach fundraisers and potential fundraisers best practices, and then do some work with AFP International and obviously Rugari, a couple of other things, but I try to get some sleep as well.
Yeah, well, and you have kids and a doodle, right?
That's right. I have three kids and a golden doodle.
Yeah. Aslan.
Yes.
Yes. We'll come back to that doodle comment in a minute. But thank you both again. And just a little background on me. I'm the Chief Development Officer for Nevada Blind Children's Foundation. And yes, technically started fundraising in 1991, but it wasn't until 96 after I finished graduate school that I went, oh, this is like a legitimate profession. This isn't just a thing you do because you work for a theater that needs money. There's like a legitimate profession here and rules and regulations and, you know, things to do. So, and I've split about half my time, both half of it in consulting and half on frontline. And I'm the immediate past president of the AFP Las Vegas chapter and a whole bunch of other things that don't involve getting near enough sleep or enough hobby time. I think the reason this topic to me really, I don't know, struck me is something interesting to chat about, is because even with longevity in the profession, you guys, I don't think a week has gone by in the last year and a half that I haven't connected with one or both of you in some way. And I assume you two are connecting with each other as well, but you guys have become not only dear, wonderful friends, but you've kind of become my gut check, that place that I go to when I'm like, okay, wait, what, how would I handle this? Or what do you think about this? And, just to shoot that quick text and I know I've texted both of you and said, okay, I need to talk and just to sit on the phone and vent something out and go, this isn't making sense, or I don't know how to deal with this or whatever. So first, let me publicly say, as Simon would say to both listeners of the podcast, let me publicly say thank you, because that relationship means so much to me and is so helpful to me as a person and as a professional. But you've already referenced Rugari. Go back to, like, I know how I remember the story. How did we meet? Do you remember where we first met or first connected?
Before Barbara spilled coffee on her pants?
Yes.
So I remember, it was at AFP Icon in San Francisco.
Yep.
At the Rugari drinks in that wine bar that closed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, right.
And yet we were there at like 9:15.
Yeah, right. And like, I think you came late and you had trouble getting in, as did I. And Cherian was already there. And I think I feel like Clay, you and I had already sort of crossed paths on Twitter, and then Cherian, I think that's the first time we actually met in person, but I think we knew of each, you and I met in Colorado Springs.
That's right.
For Rugari. So we already knew each other, and then Clay, you and I sort of circled around through on Twitter, and then the three of us met in person like that again that night.
Yes.
And yes, that's when we talked about the advisory, the CFR, the Rugari CFR group.
Yep. And it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe like 2 or 3 months after that meeting that at that bar. And so I had gone out to dinner with a friend for their birthday that night, which was, and it was people from the chapter and it was a big thing. Right. And so then I had to rush back from that dinner to find that bar, which was tucked down this little street in the basement. I was tired. I was cranky. I was broke. Now, I didn't know anybody, so I'm completely out of my element. So it wasn't until like a month or so later, actually, Barbara, that you reminded me of that. I went, "Oh, that was you."
Because we got I activated the So I moved forward pretty quickly after that. I think it was a couple months after in recruiting or confirming the two of you being on the CFR for Gregari and then getting a couple other folks. Cause I remember we had our first meeting, you know, phone conference, but in like August something or September or August or something.
Yeah.
That moved fast.
Sharon, where did you and I meet? Do you remember?
It was before San Francisco, but I don't remember where.
No, it was in San Francisco.
Was it?
At least as I remember it.
Okay. Well, it was before that.
No, it was San Francisco. So here's how I remember it.
Okay.
You did a session at AFPIcon with Rebels, Renegades, and Pioneers. You moderated it, or you were on the panel or something with, I think, Simone Joyeux.
Yes.
Which I had come to that session, and it was one of those mind-blowing sessions, and you and the panel were talking about things that just, you know, really shifted my thinking and some really deep, good, wonderful stuff that was like day one of the conference. Well, I presented a session on data, of course, day two of the conference, and you came in and stood on the wall. You leaned against the wall. And I was very conscious of your being there the whole time I was presenting, because it was my first big, it was the first time I presented to that scale at that conference. And I started getting really nervous because I had seen you the day before. I'm like, oh my God, he's in my session. Is it going to go?
No, that was not my intention at all.
No, of course not, right? And then you asked a couple of questions during this. And then you came up to me afterwards. I'm like, that was great, blah, blah, blah. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's amazing. He was there, you know. And it was for me, one of those moments of like, I thought I was meeting a rock star of fundraising.
Oh, dude.
And who knew it was, you know, head clown. So
I will take that title any day of the week. Absolutely.
But I go back to, it was fundraising that brought us together, right? And these kinds of conversations, these sort of, you know, deep academic, theoretical, we're talking about the profession and how we do what we do and how we work, that brought us together. And yet, I mean, you can tell we've developed this really great rapport and joking nature and laughing. I mean, the doodle joke when we were going through putting together the Rogare report, Barbara was forever sending out doodle polls to determine when everybody was available. Well, then Sharon goes out and gets a golden doodle, right? So not only do we have a doodle poll.
I think Barbara tried to use a stock photo of the golden doodle. I was like, oh, no, no. I have an actual doodle. I'm going to have the product placement here or whatever.
You were deeply offended that I used the stock photo, but I had no idea that you
have
your own doodle.
Yep.
So, but both of you, what does having tribe, right? What does having connection to you in the profession mean? And how does that help you as a fundraiser?
So for me, I'll start. For me, there are two ways that I think about it. One is having the folks that you can turn to, like definitely the two of you, where I can turn to ask just a quick question. Hey, can you just, where can I, you know, I remember hearing this data point. Do you remember where it could be? Or, you know, like Sharon, when I emailed you, hey, I just want to make sure I'm interpreting the tax law changes correctly, right? Or, you know, or it just any of that. But it's, so it's being able to have thought partners, and I definitely consider the two of you as thought partners in just thinking through issues, fundraising ideas, inspirations. Clay, you talked about like it's gut checks. So, you know, am I approaching this right? Am I interpreting this right? But I also, and sometimes that can be found, you know, on teams. And I remember when I was in house on very large teams, I could find my own tribe of some peers. There were some where it just didn't work for lots of reasons, but I always was lucky to find at least one or two people who were kind of my tribe. Mm-hmm. But then I also think about tribe as who are the mentors and sponsors in your life? So who are the ones who are more seasoned, who have different perspectives, maybe have different sets of experiences that I can draw from that are who are advocates. And there's a difference between mentors and sponsors. So they're the mentors who are sometimes, I feel like, they're the ones who they can help you, can be the resource, and, you know, usually more, a little bit more experienced. They can be the resource for guiding if you have, you know, career questions or, you know, kind of professional development questions. But it's the sponsors that I have found when I think about people in my life, in my professional life, the sponsors are the ones who have been the guide and the coach for me and the mm-hmm. indirect kind of teacher, direct and indirect teacher, but they're the ones who are also advocating for me. So when I'm not there, they're the ones who are, you know, putting in a good word for me, making recommendations for me, not just giving me some advice and kind of moving on. And those folks, those sponsors, there are probably two in my whole career that I can think of. The rest of who I would ever consider quote unquote mentors or are ones who kind of have come and gone throughout my career, but not in quite the same impactful way, I would say.
Sure.
I don't know. Cherian, how do you define tribe?
So I think in our industry, there are a lot of places where people can go for information. So you can, at this point, you can Google it. You can take a class or a webinar, and you both are very good about presenting webinars that are really, really insightful. I think both of you did one in the last week or two that I was on listening intently. And that information's available at conferences as well. And you know, Clay, part of the reason why I went to your session all those years ago was because I wanted to see if there are other people who are thoughtful about how we were using, or, you know, in most cases, not using data and thinking smartly about those things. And, you know, lo and behold, you were way far along that path. And so I enjoy, you know, the webinars, you know, mostly from people that I know and trust, and conference sessions from people that I know and trust, and I enjoy going to those. But for me, the big value in going to conferences is to see the two of you and the tribe of people mm-hmm. that can help answer questions that are unique to the situation that I'm dealing with. So if I'm struggling with a problem in our shop, I know I can, and I have gone to both of you to be able to say, listen, I've not really dealt with this, and I don't know what's happening here, and what's your advice or what's your counsel? And mm-hmm. you both have been so great to just walk alongside different problems and say, let's find a resource for this, or let's talk this through and share where your experience has been. And I think, honestly, as sappy as this sounds, there's a comfort in that that is very different from just being able to Google an answer. And there's this cold academic answer to, how should I acquire more donors, or I'm struggling with this major gift scenario or planned gift scenario. I mean, all that is potentially out there, but there's obviously a different kind of care relationship, to kind of go back to the topic yeah. of how you all are speaking into my life in a context that's very unique, rather than just someone who doesn't know me and hasn't shared life for a very long time. So at least for me, kind of the primary purpose of, going to these conferences, because, you know, there's so many and you could go to different ones or whatever, but I'm seeking out the ones where my tribe is and yeah. being able to spend time with them and going out to dinner and having a drink and saying, okay, you know, let's catch up. Let's talk about career and work challenges and things that are happening in your life and, you know, where you're getting your dry cleaning done these days.
there's two things that you made me think of though, in that, and you're exactly right. And the same thing. And I love being able to pick up the phone or text or tweet or whatever and go, hey, complex issue, mm-hmm. That I can't quite sort through in my head. But there's also a level of, and it's twofold. It's, okay, so the profession, and again, I love that we're seeing more and more people talking about this and how hard it is. We work in a profession where even as seasoned as we are, we're still having to defend what we do to boards, to leadership, to clients, to say, no, this is the best way to do it. It does work. I know your opinion is otherwise, but so we're in many ways trying to defend it. So on the one side, there's a great source of, and both of you have done this for me, and I hope I've done it for you as much in return. There's a great sense of, am I losing my mind, Barbara? Like, am I going nuts here? Please tell me if I'm out of control, you know? And to have that person on the other end who, both as a friend and a professional perspective, go, it's not you. You're not crazy. You're fine. You've got this. I'm rooting for you. You know, to have that encouragement and that cheering squad. You also both have done this for me and to me, which is calling my shit out. Pardon the French, but there's been times when I've reached out to you and gone, what do you think about this? And you've both gone, in a nice way, yeah, no. Get it together. That to me is really what Tribe is about. Having, again, that cheerleading session and also that ability to look at somebody and go, yep, you're on crack this time, and put it down. You know.
Well, also, and what you both have done for me is to say, hey, have you looked at this? Have you thought about this? Yeah. And I, you know, you both have had access to different resources and different experiences that you've been able to speak into a situation that I've been dealing with and say, okay, maybe you should consider this. And have you thought about that? And it's in the day-to-day pressure of fundraising where the wind is to your back and you are asked to perform and you need to make sure that you hit budget and blah, 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 all those things. It is so helpful to have someone not judgy and say, yeah, I've been there, done that. Here's how I looked at that problem. Maybe this will help you.
Well, Sherry, and to that point, you were what, 3 or 6 months ahead of me on a database migration?
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah, and yeah. It, literally, you were that voice, because I'd call you and go, okay, we're about to do, and you'd go, whatever you do, don't do this.
Yep.
And then 3 months later, I'd call you and go, we did that, and you were right.
But do you know what I also, what I appreciate so much about the two of you especially, is it isn't just, like, I you both have such such a thoughtful and, I don't know if it's deep, intellectual perhaps, perspective on issue on the fundraising sector, right? And Sherry and I stand on different sides of the fence in terms of whether it's deemed or termed a profession, but like, and we won't go there because that'll be a whole other podcast session,
right?
Yeah.
But what I really value about the two of you is just being able to say, you know, is to, you know, to talk intellectually and philosophically, if you would, about different issues within within our fundraising. So it yes, I can turn to you both for your specific areas of expertise, but, you know, for the practical stuff. But then it's, well, let's, you know, but then it's, I know I can lean on your conversation, you know, on conversations with you to think through something that might, that is beyond that. Yeah. And that's really hard. I have to say, I find that that's really hard to find. You know, you both are so so thoughtful in your perspectives. And I don't always find that, you know, in others. That's not a criticism. It's just that's, you know, you lean on people for different things. But one of the things I really appreciate about the two of you is just sitting down and having philosophical conversations about different things in our fundraising world, which we don't always have the luxury to do in the day-to-day stuff.
That's right.
So that's a great point, Barbara. And there's nothing more that gets under my skin. Well, there's a lot of things that get under my skin, as you both know, one of which is, you know, podcasts that talk about stuff and then never give you a solution. So we were fortunate to find each other and came together on a specific project through doing the critical fundraising report for the United States through Rogare. And, you know, despite our different ways we met, that is the thing that really brought us together and sort of cemented our relationship. That and going through Faculty Training Academy together at AFP. So, hey, hashtag master trainers. sorry, I cracked myself up. How the very first AFP conference that I ever went to, I left saying, yeah, I probably won't come back, because it felt very clicky to me, and I didn't know anybody, and I didn't come away with that connection. So what I want to do at this stage of my professional career is encourage others. How do you find them? Barbara, you already talked about mentors and sponsors, and that to me implies a bit of a more formal relationship and their outcomes and all of that, as you kind of talked about. But what would you say to young fundraisers, to fundraisers that are operating in a city that may not have an active chapter or an active network? Like, how would we tell somebody, you know, this, go out and find your tribe? How would you find your fundraising tribe?
So I have an unpopular answer and then perhaps a more popular answer. The unpopular answer, and I know, and maybe Simon's like, delete that part, is that your tribe doesn't have to be fundraisers. Mm-hmm. Your tribe could be other smart, thoughtful, caring humans mm-hmm. who are willing to listen. Now, just to underline and underscore what you said, Clay, they may have opinions about your fundraising that are not well-formed because they don't know best practices, but they would be able to help you as a human in other ways. So I would just say, like, having, I have a friend who has what she calls a board of directors, a personal board of directors.
Ha, I love that.
I love it too. And I mean, she's very well accomplished, and her board of directors helps her address different issues. And she stocks that board the way that a nonprofit would stock a board, with different expertise in different areas. So if she has a legal question, if she has a, you know, human resources, career professional development question, it's very smart and it's very thoughtful about how she's orchestrated that. So that's sort of the unpopular answer. I think that the more popular, like, let's be fundraisers answer is that at conferences, whether they are the, you know, big ones like AFP International, I personally go to the first time networking session where they do speed dating at the beginning of the conference, because I think it's important for people to connect with people who have been there before and get their questions answered.
That is brilliant. Like, I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm going with you at the next one.
Yeah. I didn't even know about it.
Oh, let's all go together.
Okay, we're doing it.
Okay.
I'll bring the coffees because I know all of you will need that. And
I'll wear the white jeans.
There you go. it's great to be able to just connect with others. So if you're new to the profession, or if you are, or even if you've been in the profession a long time, I would just encourage you to attend those networking events with an eye towards not just who needs to connect, but just, you know, being connectable and being willing to go up to somebody and introduce yourself and say, hey, my name is blah, 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 and be open to both being a mentor or sponsor and being mentored or sponsored yourself. Mm-hmm. And wherever that is, whether it's the chapter level or a conference or something like that. The other thing I'll throw out there, which is probably a more popular position from our friend Heather, is that CFRE Central has this online forum where you can go and ask questions and connect with other fundraisers and get answers to some questions. I don't know how well that's adapted to a longer, deeper relationship, but at least you can kind of start there and get some quick questions answered and start to build a tribe, and then maybe connect with those people elsewhere.
I love that idea. Neat. Barbara?
Jaren, I love that idea of the board of directors that are not in fundraising, because when I think about some of the resources, the books I'm reading and the resources that I draw from, they're not in fundraising. So, you know, Clay, your favorite, The Power of Moments, and the other Heath Brother books, and Simon Sinek's Start With Why, and sort of the list goes on. I think that there's so much that we can, you know, we don't work in a vacuum. So there's so much that we can draw from professionally and how to be better fundraisers, but then also personally, learning from other sectors and other professions and careers and roles to see you know, what are some other best practices that that we can learn from? So I think that that's absolutely terrific. And I think in terms of finding the tribe locally, you know, Clay, when I first attended the AFB International, I have come late to coming to going to ICON. So my first one was in Boston, and I went because I used to live in Boston, so it was kind of an easy excuse to get there. But I remember knowing no one, and I went to the chapter reception, the DC chapter reception, but that was it. And so I was sort of floating under the radar, going to all sorts of incredible sessions. And I remember being blown away because this was the first exposure I had to like some really incredible experts. But the last two icons, definitely having you two there and being able to share that experience and sort of, you know, go to different sessions together and talk about them and do, you know, network with each other and with others that we bring into our group, that has made it such a richer experience for me. And but I recognize that that's going to be very unusual for, it's not going to be accessible to all. And what I would say is that there are likely some networks of fundraisers. If there's not an active AFP chapter, there are likely other groups that are going to be around and for fundraisers. So whether it's an educational, whether they're in education, there's going to be probably, you know, in MACE, the independent schools, or CASE, there may be some CASE members there. If they're in healthcare, there might be some AHP members, but there are, I think the beauty of the internet now, for many reasons, is that you can quickly access where there might be some smaller networking groups that you can get involved in. Because I remember when I was early starting out in my career, there was a group up in Boston called Women in Development, and they are still thriving. And I got involved with them because NSFRE at the time, they were not, the chapter up there was not particularly strong, I think. So I remember one of my mentors at the time also had been involved. So I got involved, and that was a great learning experience for me in networking and getting to meet others. So I didn't feel so isolated, and I could, you know, kind of reach out to other experts and learn from other folks. And it also gave me some professional development experience because I ended up being on the board when I had absolutely no board experience at all.
So of course.
I had no business being on the board, but I was there, and it was a great learning experience for me. So the networks are there. I mean, the AFPDC chapter, we are quite active and quite large, but we have affinity groups. And so those are great ways and we have free brown bag lunches every first Friday. So those are great for people to kind of just dip their toe into getting to know other fundraisers.
Well, and I would add to that, Barbara, because one of the things that does kind of frustrate me is most of the professional associations, there's always a professional development aspect to it, right? There's always a program. There's always a, you know, a learning session or something. And that's wonderful. That's what they're there for. But I would also encourage every association and every professional development organization to just create social hours. Mm-hmm. Because really, sometimes you just want to be around people that are in your profession or in a sister profession and, you know, and have a cocktail and just go, man, this is hard work. Yeah, it is. Here, let me buy you a drink. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for those social aspects. The other thing that I would at least say on finding tribe, and in a way, a challenge to all of us. I mean, Sharian, you just challenged us to something we hadn't thought of before, which I think is fantastic. But I would challenge anybody that's been in the profession for a while, anybody that's seen as a leader or thinks of themselves as a leader, to be open to make not mentoring. I mean, yes to mentoring, yes to sponsorship, but be open to making a friend with somebody who is different from you, who's younger, who's in a different subsegment, who comes from a different background, who has different abilities or a different outlook on the world. Because even if we can say, you know, I've been doing this for decades. Honestly, some of these whippersnappers will tell me something. I'm like, wow, I literally have never thought of trying that. And, you know, let's learn from that. But there's also an exchange, too, of you know, being able to look to a younger fundraiser and go, no, it's not all running around town picking up silent auction items, I promise. There's a lot of good here. So there's a lot of good give and take that we can learn by being open to it. And I'll sort of wrap up with, you know, a Brené Brown moment. I know the three of us are readers of Brené Brown and appreciate her work. It's, I think there's a certain vulnerability that you have to let yourself be open to, mm-hmm. to make friends with, to be open to being around another fundraiser and letting that tribe in, number one. And number two, there's a vulnerability on the other side of, we have to let ourselves be vulnerable and open to letting people in, you know, to seeing that person in the corner of the room that's standing by themselves, or seeing that person who is kind of sitting alone in one of the sessions, or, you know, whatever it may be. To, there's a lot of richness in this field. There's a lot of experience, and there's a lot of beautiful, wonderful people. And the more vulnerable we are to being open to that, the stronger the tribe will become. The stronger the tribe is, the stronger the fundraising, the better the missions, you know, it all plays off of each other. So
it's a circle of fundraising life.
It's the circle of life.
That's very timely.
You guys have Lion King coming through, do you? Or, oh no, it's the movie coming out. Yeah.
Yeah, the movie.
Yep. Nice. You guys, I know we're pushing time. I think we would be remiss if we didn't also say, you know, how lucky we are to get to call Simon a friend. I mean, Simon, yeah, one of the great, I think, thought leaders and
absolutely
great presenters of our time, you know, to get to call him friend and to sort of take over his podcast while he's out and about. And hopefully we didn't ruin it too much. I'm gonna wrap up and say thank you guys both for, thank you for your friendship. Thank you for being a part of the tribe. Thank you for being a part of my board of directors, and thanks for making time for today.
It's fun. Oh, thanks. Thank you for inviting us, Clay. This was great.
And thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.